right, you primitive screwheads. Listen up.
Guys, we have a code red.
You mean code red the hospital emergency alert, code red the computer worm, or code red the cherry-flavored soft drink from makers of Mountain Dew?
One ring to rule them all.
One ring to find them.
Oh, Jesus.
One ring to bring them all.
And in the darkness, bind them.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
Where's my super suit?
What?
You tell me where my suit is, woman!
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run? Did you ever see that?
No. It's probably some dumb sports movie anyways.
Sports movie?
Okay, we gotta put a spotlight on this geek stuff, man.
What the fuck are you bitches babbling about?
We need to bring this to the mainstream, to the people.
Wow, this is even better than I imagined.
We have to show the world that it ain't just about comics and toys.
I have to possess this comic.
Hey, I tried to teach you how to handle comics in the sixth grade, but oh no, you wanted to play Little League instead.
Looks like a really rich fourth grader lives here.
Look at this place, man.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty. Isis.
We're not about dressing up as Green Lantern.
How often does one see a beloved fictional character come to life?
Every year at Comic-Con.
And hoping for that one day, that one fracking day, for Cylons to bring us down a possible space-age future shit.
That's exactly what it's about.
Oh, really? Yeah, the shit ain't gonna work.
Oh, man! I'm still geeking out about it!
All right, look. There's only one return, okay? And it ain't of the king, it's of the Jedi.
Looks like we got more Lucas hounds here to mock Roddenberry.
You'll have to excuse him. He's not down with the trilogy.
There's only one trilogy, you fucking morons.
Oh, Star Wars geek.
Oh, I'm the geek? Look at you two whipping out your preciouses.
I'm gonna kick your ass back to the Shire if you don't shut your fucking mouth.
Where are the stars in this piece of shit?
All right, guys, you have your mission. Go forth and wreak havoc.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Come on, you fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't fight? Shit! I'll fucking take all you want!
Something like that, I'd suppose.
It's been many years.
Way long since the old PK has shown up in the geek stuff world.
We keep mentioning you from time to time. You live on strong,
yes,
within the show's history.
Much appreciated.
But it's been a while since you've actually been on the show itself.
And I must welcome you to this is kind of a unique endeavor in guest starring, because I'm guest starring on your show.
Right.
But you're guest starring in my studio tonight.
Kind of funny how that works out, isn't it?
So this is, dare I go Hamlet on you and say incestuous, or I don't know.
Studio Flick is much better equipped than Studio A on occasion.
Go on.
So I'm happy to do the show here.
I'm thrilled to have you, and I'm thrilled to that you asked me to come do this. This is exciting stuff.
Well, you know, Big Kev is not here this week because he's doing something.
That's because he wasn't invited to my house.
Right. Well, there is that. And in true show history, I have never missed a single episode of Big Kev's Geek Stuff, the podcast. So the show must go on.
Very
and
nice.
I am doing a show. And instead of doing it by myself this week, I was like, I probably should ask someone to do it with me because I'm boring by myself.
Let's see what that other asshole's up to. Get over there. Well, this is cool stuff. So, this studio is new to the whole geek stuff thing. So, what's the deal? Where do we go from here?
Well, let's start by naming the episode. We're gonna say this is Big Kev's Geek Stuff, the podcast, episode 213. The show must go on.
Ah, very nice.
Because the show must go on.
Yes,
just
it must.
Kev is unavailable. I am always available. And here we are doing
you
a show.
You are so going to get it. I hear it coming.
Well, you know, it happens. But with that, we can move forward.
Yes.
Let's jump right into the news.
All right. And that's one of these things over here. Is that comic news or what's in the news?
That's what's in the news.
All right. Let's do that.
Geek stuff. What's in the news?
Nice.
So what's in the news this week is I am terribly jealous of you.
Oh, yes, you are. as you should be.
And because I didn't see it, and you did.
There's the nature of my employment definitely has its perks, and what Matt's talking about is I got a look last night, folks, at the illustrious, luminous, marvelous Tron Legacy.
A good 11 days before the rest of us are going to get to see it. Is that what 11 days? That math?
10 days. Yeah. Right. Thrilling. Absolutely thrilling. I was terrified going into this thing for a number of reasons. Number one, I love this movie from my childhood. This was huge. This sequel is finally coming, as you can relate to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure, and pretty much most of the audience that's listening to this right now. That excitement was really building up a high expectation. I spent a boatload of money on the toys and whatnot.
Merch.
I've got some nice discounts coming my way for that, but I still spent a lot of money on merch that is now adorning my office. And there was nervousness that I was going to go into that office today and take every last thing off the shelf and say, fuck this movie, I'm done.
In one fell swoop,
yeah.
Just arm it right off.
If you've seen the trailer, you know, the whole thing with the young Jeff Bridges sweeping the
yes.
stuff off of the table, that would have been me today. Didn't happen that way.
Good.
I'm absolutely thrilled with the movie. I'm not going to say a lick about anything spoilerific, but I was really, really thrilled with what they did. It looks amazing and is a lot of fun.
I have to say that the true benefit, even though I didn't get to see it, the true benefit of having you see it first
mm-hmm.
means that I now can rest comfortably for the next 10 days because I know for a fact that if you liked it and it lived up to all of your expectations, then there's no way that it won't live up to mine as well.
That's well, thank you. I'm flattered. It was really something to see. Now, and I got to say something. I kind of have to berate a little bit. A faction, if I may,
okay.
of the geek community. And I coined a phrase on Twitter last night, which I got some chuckles over. I used the term geekmudgeon.
Yeah.
right. Yesterday on Twitter, and there I've read some reviews of other people that have seen Tron, and they really some of the reviews I've read. I'm not going to give them any press over here either. You know, find them yourselves. If you're really desperate, go to find me on Twitter and you know try and find the way. That's me. If you're really desperate to find it, but anyway, there was this one particular review that just lambasted the hell out of the film with these outrageous expectations of what it should have been. You know, there was no character development, and it was all eye candy, and the best part of the movie was Daft Punk, and so on and so forth. And you know, they didn't do this and they didn't do that, and all these it's like real deep movie critic kind of stuff,
right?
Coming from someone who's clearly a geek and clearly he reads. As comic book guy from The Simpsons. This is a faction of geek that drives me mad because I feel that they're the types that they just love to hate stuff. They love to hate stuff, period.
Well, we've been talking about these geek mudgeons without calling them that here on Geek Stuff for the past couple weeks because we've been talking about these people in regards to The Walking Dead.
Right.
Because there's a lot of those people out there. And I don't want to detract us away from Tron and move to The Walking Dead, but it's the same group of people that have been bitching and moaning
right.
about what happened on that show and the season finale and all of that stuff. So,
yeah, it's incredibly frustrating because there's the term unpleasable comes to mind.
Absolutely.
There's no way to make these folks happy. They love to hate stuff, and that's the way it's going to be. And it's really frankly unfair, especially in the world of Tron. Listen, this movie was out in 1982. It is not a great film.
No, it's
we
not.
All know that and embrace that as fans, as people that grew up with this. But you know what? I was 7 at the time.
Right.
You know, we were all in that age bracket where you know it was something new, it was something incredible to see, and we all played Tron. I got on my bicycle as you know as things went on. And you know we were light cycling it up on our bicycles,
oh,
you know, ages ago. You know, and this is, to be honest, let's not delude ourselves to think that we are the true target audience for Tron Legacy.
Oh no,
it's a Disney film, folks. It's a PG rated Disney film. It is a sequel to a movie about a guy who gets sucked into a video game. If you're looking for anything more complex than that, you got a problem.
Yeah, it's. You know, it's the same problem. I think this is an overwhelming problem in Hollywood right now in general. I think you need to go into these movies. Not every movie has to be Schindler's List. You know what I mean? Not every movie
exactly.
has to be amazing. And I have this conversation with a lot of people sometimes, and they see these movies and they're like, oh, well that movie's not for me. Well, why? Well, it was just kind of a silly comedy. Yeah, but don't you just need a silly comedy sometimes? Don't you just need a movie that is visually stunning and amazing sometimes? Don't you need a movie that you can just kind of immerse yourself in and fully enjoy? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm looking for in Legacy. If it's anything more than that, it's a bonus. But if it's nothing more than that, then it's still amazing.
I'm hoping. I mean, the way, and I will recommend, I will make this recommendation to the audience. The way really best to see it, if you have access to it, is the IMAX.
Okay.
Is 3D. On our show and even on here or with you personally, I've bitched and moaned about 3D, you know, constantly.
Sure.
But listen, 3D has its place. It worked in Avatar, and unfortunately, this is another thing I got shit for. Another geek mudgeon thing was all the bitching about Avatar. But I loved Avatar for what it was and the experience that it provided for me in the cinema. And I still love the movie for that. But I'm also angry at Avatar because of the 3D craze that it really spawned. Everybody right. panicking to do all the transfers and all that. But when you've got a movie that's specifically designed, you know, with 3D in mind, this will be a 3D experience, it works. And in Tron Legacy, you really owe it to yourself to, if you're going to see this in the theater, you do indeed owe it to yourself to have the 3D experience. This is not a conversion job. It's the real deal. And it's really, truly immersive and the best way to do it.
Well, I guess not really, unfortunately, but I know for at least my first screening, it's not going to be the 3D experience because I plan on going at midnight.
Yep.
I believe me and Kev are actually going to be hosting the midnight show over at AMC Clifton Commons.
I will be there.
That night. So, you know, I'm not going to get that IMAX experience for the first go.
Right.
However, I know probably over the course of the week after.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure it's going to be in a 3D screening there, though, too, yeah? They do have the capabilities.
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely be a 3D screening. Yeah. I'm sure I think at least a handful of the theaters will be 3D.
IMAX, I don't know how they're handling that. IMAX is kind of the bonus way, you know, but if you can't see it on an IMAX screen, and it's not just for the giant picture sake of thing, but this really is a sound experience, too.
Oh, sure.
So the IMAX sound will really blow you out of the back of the theater, too. I mean, that's not to say you're going to miss out. I think if you see it on a smaller screen, you know, it's still the experience is the experience.
Right.
I think your most ideal Tron Legacy experience, however, is the IMAX 3D routine there.
Yep. Well, that's like I said, I will definitely check it out there in some capacity.
Highly recommend it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And don't let the geek mudgeons get you down. It's just unplug and enjoy it. That's really all I can say for folks to do. You know, don't expect too much. Just go expecting a lot of pretty colors and a lot of really cool looking shit, and you're going to come away, you know, satisfied. I was completely satisfied with the movie.
Awesome. I cannot wait. I'm absolutely ecstatic. And, you know, I got 10 more days, but I know they'll go by fast because I'm eagerly anticipating. But while we were talking geek mudgeons, and I did bring up The Walking Dead. Have you watched the finale?
I have. I did catch up on it. That was my research for today.
Okay, so we can talk about the finale.
We can openly discuss, yes.
Fuck everybody that didn't like it. I'm just saying it. Everybody that bitched about the CDC storyline, just fuck yourself. Don't watch season two. Go cry on the couch. Watch Mad Men. Watch Breaking Bad.
Wow.
Go watch Driving Miss Daisy. I don't give a shit. Don't watch Walking Dead. Because if you bitched about that season finale in the overall scope of the show, then you have no place watching the show. If you bitched about it as a standalone episode, it was the weakest of the six.
Yeah,
There's
I will
no
give
doubt
that.
About it.
I will give that.
But to everybody that was like, oh, it's making it too sci-fi and I don't want my mysteries to be explained to me, this was everybody jumping the gun and then not knowing how to follow through when their complaints had no basis. All I can say is at the end of the episode, the CDC blew up.
Yeah.
They didn't explain anything.
Well, what they did with this, I feel it's a complete and utter departure from the book.
Absolutely.
Totally. But what it really has done is it's just another stop on their trip. And I think now starting with season two, because, I mean, Kirkman, I think, explained this in an interview, and it's kind of logical to me. This was a very, very bold TV show.
Sure.
And no one at AMC, no one anywhere had any idea, is this shit going to take off or not?
Right.
You know, as vast of an audience as the comic book audience is for The Walking Dead, it's still a very small audience, you know,
TV-wise,
overall,
yeah.
for television, you know, and what they needed to make sure they did was not only rein in the Walking Dead audience from the comic books, but they need to appeal to the AMC crowd, to a wider base of people that not necessarily are readers of the comic book, but are going to be drawn into the human drama element of this series. It's a lot of factors and a lot of worry and a lot of concern. Shit, we might not make it past this little experimental season. So they had to kind of keep it interesting and tie it into a little bow at the end of this little six season package, and now we can get right back on track with season two and back on track to the going with the book narrative and seeing the familiar stuff that we know from the books.
If for some reason this didn't make it to a season two, let's say it got canceled, mm-hmm. and this episode six was the last episode, then it would have just been like any other zombie movie. They encountered a lot of shit.
Yep.
they had some sort of resolution, and at the end of the movie, they're just moving on. The zombies are still there.
Yep.
They still have to contend with the issues, but there was a resolution to at least what they had started, and I think that was important.
Yeah, this season one is a comic story arc. This is a six issue or arc.
Right.
Or eight episodes or six episodes?
It was six.
It was six. This was a six issue arc, pretty much in any comic book, and now that arc is over, and we can move on with season two. And they're locked in. They've got their audience locked in. And for those of you that are fans of it, don't abandon it because you're pissed off about, you know, the CDC thing. You know, there's a method to their madness, and these are the things that you have to do. You have to make concessions like that in TV.
Well, I have two more things I want to address, and then we can move away from The Walking Dead. We can stumble upon.
I don't know how many people are listening after you told them all to go fuck themselves.
well, hopefully there are a few that agreed with me, and the rest of them go fuck themselves.
There you go.
For those of you who are complaining about, well, it doesn't fit into this storyline, the only thing I have to say about that is it's completely logical to assume that if there was a zombie apocalypse, that the CDC would be looking into it.
Oh, yeah.
So having our main characters interact with that, to me, is not that big of a departure where I should get upset. Also, to those of you who are complaining, because I've read this on several pages and on Twitter feeds and stuff, for those of you who are complaining that the windows of the RV and the windows of the van didn't shatter and explode when the CDC exploded, and how unbelievable and how unrealistic that is. You're watching a zombie movie or TV show?
Wait, that's the unrealistic thing they're latching onto?
The blowing up windows is the least of your worries. You've already suspended all of your disbelief to allow zombies to enter your brain. Non-blowing up, maybe a special non-blow-up proof glass.
Wow.
I mean, just can't you find any amount of happiness in something that is genuinely creative and different, and just enjoy it for what it is and embrace it for what it is?
That's where we as a geek community, and that's really anybody, the theatrical term, suspend your disbelief.
Right.
You know, there, Tron for me made me 7 years old again, and I transported back to that, and it's the kind of movie that, okay, let's bring you back to make you a kid again and bring you back to that sense of wonder and astonishment. And that's what you do. You unplug and go into that again. Stop overanalyzing all this shit. Just enjoy it for what it is. Good Lord. The windows.
Believe me, if I hadn't read it on a couple of different sites, including, and I don't want to call anybody out, but including on the very message boards for this show, a couple of people even said that. I don't understand how that is the thing that you choose to address. Like, to me, I didn't even think about the fact that the windows didn't, until I read somebody said the windows didn't blow up. I was like, really? Because I was too busy thinking about how great it was that they were moving on, and that, you know, maybe Herschel's farm is the thing we see next. But we can move past all that.
Amazing. I'm so glad I did not read this stuff, because I would have been as right there with you in the angry front. And you know me, I rage better than you do.
See, you would have been on the go fuck yourself bandwagon also. All right, moving forward with some news. There's not a lot this week, but I did want to point out a couple of headlines. Things we kind of knew, maybe not. Cate Blanchett has confirmed her return for The Hobbit. I don't think this is a huge surprise. Mm. Pretty much everybody that was in it originally that had some sort of role in The Hobbit is coming back.
I mean, is The Hobbit just going to be, hey, it's everybody from Lord of the Rings plus Martin Freeman?
Yes.
Can they just post that on IMDb as the cast list at this point?
Well, I mean, they've cast like Gloin and Thorin and like, you know, Andy Serkis, I think, is doing Smaug. And like but, you know, there are a bunch of characters that bleed over. Not to mention there's this whole other movie with content that we don't entirely know what it is. So I think bringing some of these characters and really tying it in together, I don't think it's a surprise to hear that Cate Blanchett is returning.
I want now. Hugo Weaving, is there a bleed over with his character?
Yes. Elrond
pokes in, right?
I believe he does poke in, and I think he is going to be in it. And I don't think he's too busy doing the Red Skull to do it. So so I think we're okay there.
Nice.
All right, now this is something I know nothing about at all, but I thought maybe you would know a little bit about it.
Oh, shit. Pressure's on.
This is Lovecraft's, at the at the Mountains of Madness that's being directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I don't know anything about Lovecraft, anything other than Cthulhu. That's it. That's where it starts and ends for me. Only because I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
And you're going to kill me, but Mountains of Madness is something I read, oh my lord, it had to be freshman year or even earlier of high school.
Okay.
And I don't remember anything since. So I'm just as useless pretty much on this particular Lovecraft story. It's a mythos story, though, isn't it? Isn't it a Cthulhu mythos story? Not focusing on maybe Cthulhu himself
it is a mythos story, and I think that the character of Cthulhu in the story itself is kind of a presence more than an actual character.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Kind of like in South Park recently.
Yeah. That being said, I think it'll be interesting to see if they actually, how they tweak that and change that. You know, Del Toro is a twisted man with a beautiful mind.
I can't wait to see what he's going to do with these various mythos creatures that are terrifying in any form, but in this guy's hands, forget it. Nightmare City.
And who knows? Maybe if this does well, he'll tackle more Lovecraft stuff going forward. I think he's probably the brain for it, the mind for it. Him and maybe Terry Jones.
Yeah.
right. Those are the only two names.
Wait, Terry Jones or Terry Gilliam?
Terry Gilliam. Yeah. Sorry. So yeah, there it is.
Nice.
All right. How about another Robin Hood movie?
Really?
The Wachowski. I can't call them the Wachowski brothers anymore. What do we call them now? The Wachowski brother and his cross-dressing hasn't quite turned into a girl sister?
Let's just call them the Wachowski siblings.
All right.
Why do we go that route?
First of all, I did not know about this whole Lana Wachowski thing.
No?
I didn't know that. I had heard about it vaguely, and then I kind of forgot about it.
It's been around for years now.
And then I saw it again today, and I was like, wait, what? So they are doing what they're calling an urban modern take on Robin Hood with the working title of Hood.
Really?
And it's going to be like, and by urban, I think we should clarify, by urban,
careful. Easy.
I don't mean
Watch
about
it.
The, you know what I'm getting at. I don't mean about the Death at a Funeral remake.
Ah, very good.
Or the Honeymooners remake.
That's
version.
What we're talking about here.
I mean, I don't want to say any words that'll get offended, that'll offend anybody, but I think they're talking about like in a city setting, modern day. That's what they mean by
so
urban.
We're talking what the hell? Baz Luhrmann's Robin Hood.
Yeah, exactly.
Where his gun will be called a sword. You know, the bullets will be arrow brand bullets.
I don't think. I don't think we need another Robin Hood movie. That's first of all. And second of all, don't we have anything else we can do? Are there any other ideas?
Certainly
that
not another Robin Hood movie, for God's sake.
I mean, we're just coming off the tales of that other Robin Hood movie, which I still have not seen yet, by the way. I'm a little scared to watch it. But,
yeah.
But I don't know. It just seems to me it's another pillaging of uncreative Hollywood again.
It just seems utterly unnecessary. But I do have to say, I guess it had to be, let me see, we're on episode, 200-something?
213. Yeah.
I think it was around episode 18. Was one of the very early times I guess mic'd, and I'm grasping at straws. 18 sounds familiar, and we gave you such shit about Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Yes,
and look how that turned out. So we could be dramatically surprised, for Hood.
Maybe my issue isn't that they're simply taking the Robin Hood story, because I think it's a good story. You know, rob from the rich, give to the poor. It's a pretty generic story that can be applied in many ways, but maybe you don't need to call it Hood, and maybe the lead character doesn't need to be Robin. You know what I mean? Like Avatar was very much kind of Romeo and Juliet-ish.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
in a minute. Can't you just do a kind of, kind of take the idea of Robin Hood and develop a thing around it without making it Robin
Hood?
But
then it becomes, then the geek mudgeons and everyone else will bitch about it for being derivative. Oh, it's just like Robin Hood. This is a ripoff of Robin Hood. It's derivative. It's crap. This is an original. So, you know what? Just embrace the unoriginality and say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just do another Robin Hood story. We'll call it Hood. It'll be Robin Hood and all about Robin Hood and fuck everybody.
Let's hope the Wachowski siblings.
Oh, fuck yourselves. I'm just going to make the movie and that's it.
So we'll just hope the Wachowskis, the siblings,
the Wachowski siblings,
can do something good with this. All right, wow. One final thing in the news, which is kind of a no duh, but maybe not to everybody. Favreau was talking this week about
Jean Favreau.
Jean Favreau. About Iron Man 3, and he says that it's going to be a sequel to Captain America and the Avengers. Now, this is something that I've kind of speculated at before.
Okay.
Especially because Thor, Cap, and the Avengers are the next three big Marvel movies.
Right.
In this part of the Marvel world, if you don't include
in that order?
Thor is next.
Yep.
Then Cap, then Avengers.
Okay.
If you don't include Spider-Man and you don't include X-Men First Class, both of which are in the works right now, and Wolverine also.
Right.
But Iron Man 3 is going to be a sequel to those. Which doesn't entirely surprise me, because what I suspect will happen is at the end of the Avengers movie, Iron Man's character will obviously be progressed, possibly changed a little bit, being a part of this team.
Yep.
He'll probably go off on his own, and whatever adventures he has in the third film will probably somehow tie back to what happens in the Avengers movie at the very least. I don't think that's that big of a news break. It's kind of like, well, that's logical.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not so much a, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing it, as it's a, yeah, okay, makes sense.
Yeah. It's the natural progression of the character.
We'll call that a shrug.
Yeah. There you go.
A news shrug.
All right. I think that's the news.
That's the news.
So why don't we move into, we're breaking format a little this week. Because normally we would take a break and Big Kev's not here and I don't have to listen to his format. Nah. I'm doing my own thing.
You're in a different studio. Break down those walls.
Exactly. So why don't we go into, DVDs?
That's this one here. There it goes.
Geek Stuff. DVD News.
I don't care what DVDs came out this week, to be quite honest with you.
There's really only one. That's the only one.
I'm sure there are other things, and someone's going to be like, you didn't mention, you didn't talk about Inception. That's it. It starts and ends with Inception.
That's all you need to care about.
I'm only buying a DVD a week at this point, maybe, and Inception is on the list because I didn't ask for it for Christmas, so it means I have to pay for it myself.
I made it a point to say, look, I'm not putting this on the Christmas list because I have to have it the day it comes out.
Exactly.
So I just know I'm going to buy this Blu-ray and that's it.
Yeah, I just haven't been to the store yet, but I anticipate I will be in the next day or two. So, so Inception came out this week. Obviously, it came out in a regular DVD, right? And then there's the Blu-ray DVD digital copy version.
If I read it right, there's the standard DVD version, there's the single disc Blu-ray version, and then there's the Blu-ray DVD digital copy dealy, and then that's the extent of it. I know Best Buy had some kind of random exclusive where you had a copy of the shooting script.
Okay.
Along with that, I got mine from Target last minute because we got in late from the Tron screening. And I looked at the clock, and I had that moment of, ah, shit, I was supposed to get Inception on the day it came out. Looked at the clock, checked up Target online, said, wow, they're open till 11. I'll be right back. and picked it up there. So that's where I got mine from. No big exclusives, but I just they had the best price presently on that I've seen on the Blu-ray DVD combo dealy.
Nice.
It's like $18 till I don't even know when.
So, later. Obviously, other than the movie, Blu-ray, DVD, and digital copy version, there's a couple special features on here. Extraction mode. And I'm going to read the little flavor text on the back of this packaging. Ooh. Infiltrate the movie's imaginative landscape to learn how Christopher Nolan, Leonardo DiCaprio, and the cast and crew designed and achieved the film's signature moments. Just sounds like a featurette.
Nice behind-the-scenes kind of stuff. I'm not sure. Extraction mode, I think, is a mode where you watch... I haven't checked it out yet because we just watched the film last night, which looks great, by the way. It looks and sounds wonderful. It's another perfect Blu-ray film. But the extraction mode, I think, is a mode where the film plays and there might be a picture-in-picture kind of deal. Or maybe something that you can cut to or something like that with
insights. It's that Blu-ray interactive kind of deal.
I'll know more about that probably by next week when I can sit down with that.
Then there's Dream, Cinema of the Subconscious, which is another kind of featurette behind the scenes, yada, yada, et cetera. Kind of cool. I'm definitely going to check that out. But the thing I really want to check out...
I think you're going to say what I think you're going to say.
...is Inception, The Cobol Job.
Yes.
The comic prologue in full animation and motion, and it says, see the events that led to the beginning of the movie. I didn't know that was going to be on there until I had this package in my hand.
Oh, yeah?
I hadn't read anything about that. I didn't know that it existed.
That's nice.
So it's a complete surprise.
I'd procured the comic to read that. It's a neat story. It kind of because of that story, it takes a little bit of my theories away about Inception as a film and, you know, the layers of the dream and so on and so forth. But It's a neat story, and, okay. and it's well done. I'm looking very forward to seeing that in a motion comic format, however, and I'm not sure how, if it's acted out like the Watchmen one, where it's just kind of a reader that does it, or if we have people playing all the various characters. Well, I'm curious to know how they deliver that.
This is a little weird, because see, like, when you say motion comic, I think of Watchmen the motion comic, right? But this is in full animation and motion, so I'm thinking this is not... Is it not a motion comic? Is it an animated feature? I mean, that description, and obviously neither of us have had the chance to watch this yet. It just came out and we've been preoccupied with other things. But that description is a little confusing.
If we have time, when we wrap this whole thing up, we might have to take a look at this downstairs, because that's a good question. Full animation and motion. I read it as like a motion comic kind of deal, but I don't know.
Description's a little wonky.
Let's read this again. Comic prologue in full animation and motion. I'm thinking motion comic.
I'm thinking motion comic.
But maybe more souped up. Like the Watchmen one was kind of clunky a little bit and what have you. I'm wondering if they've kind of put more motion to it, you know, arm waves, mouth movements, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, maybe it's a little less static and a little more
interactive. If you can't stick around, I still plan to check that out. Ooh. And the lenticular packaging on the front of the Blu-ray is very nice as
fancy,
well.
Fancy, fancy. So that's really it in DVDs this week. If you want to go and pick something else up, that's your own fault, but Inception, that's the one to get this
that's
week.
That's the one to look for.
Hands down, if you haven't seen it yet, you definitely want to. If you have seen it yet, I can't imagine this is one that you don't want to own in your permanent collection.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, go grab it, and I think that's it. And I think with that, we're probably going to take our first break.
That sounds good to me, because I could use one.
Okay.
Very good.
Are you looking for some non-traditional ways to say Merry Christmas to your fellow geeks this year? Then check out Tom's Grzanski's Holiday Card Catalog. From the artist of Karma Incorporated's Antigone, Tales of the Middlemen, and the weekly webcomic Post-Apocalyptic Nick comes a series of holiday cards with a twisted sense of humor. Log into tomsgrzanski.etsy.com and enter coupon code GEEKSTUFF for 15% off your purchase. That's Tom Grzanski, T-O-M, KURZANSKI.etsy.com.
Attention Geek Stuff listeners. Do you have a business, website, or other product or service that you would like to advertise on BigKevsGeekStuff.com or the show Big Kev's Geek Stuff? Reach thousands and thousands of people each and every week for a low, low price. Big Kev's Geek Stuff offers advertising prices for everybody's budget. For more information on these packages, check out BigKevsGeekStuff.com and click on the advertising button. Big Kev's Geek Stuff, the best geek exposure for your advertising dollar. Advertising space.
Hey, this is Adam West from Batman and Family Guy and a few other things.
Who is it this time, Commissioner? Joker, Egghead, Riddler, King Tut?
And you're listening to Big Kev's Geek Stuff.
Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
And we are back with Big Kev's Geek Stuff, episode 213, The Show Must Go On.
Nice.
Don't forget, if there's anything you want to talk about that we discussed tonight, you have a question, a comment, a concern, you want to tell me to go fuck myself.
you're going to get that.
You can leave us a voicemail over at 425-920-6050, and you may hear yourself on a future episode of Big Kev's Geek Stuff.
What's that again? I'm calling that right now.
No, I'm not giving it to you. And with all of that being said, how about we go right into comic books?
Oh boy, that's this one.
Geek Stuff. The comic news.
These are cool.
Fun, aren't they? normally this is the part where Kev tells you a bunch of stuff that came out this past week. He lists like 70 different Green Hornet books that came out this week. I sit back with disgust and moan and groan. But we're not doing that this week.
Nice.
Because we're doing, I'm going to do more of a quick review on a single book that I picked up that I'm interested in. We're leaving it at that.
I'm seeing gears. I'm smelling steampunk.
You are smelling steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book by Joe Benitez. Written, created, drawn, etc. He didn't ink it. Someone else did the inking. But this is Lady Mechanica number one. Now, Lady Mechanica Zero came out, I think it was back in September. There was a reprinting about two and a half weeks ago. And then this issue one of the full series came out today. This is under the Aspen Comics imprint, which is Fathom is a book that comes out under there. That's okay. Probably the big one. But
are they a sub-branch of anyone, or they're kind of their own
they're
thing?
They're a sub-branch of Top Cow, which I think may or may not still be a sub-branch of Image. Hmm. I don't know. That they all kind of splintered into their own weird world, and
right.
People are just putting shit out now. So I'm not exactly sure where Aspen falls anymore. I know they were associated with Top Cow, and Top Cow was associated with Image. So I don't know if this is like second cousin twice removed or some crazy shit. But
we're going to bring up that old incestuous word again if we don't quit it.
But that being said, yeah, this is Lady Mechanica. Now, there were two covers for this particular issue. If you listen to the show pretty regularly, if you've listened to all 213 episodes of the show, you know that I am a huge J. Scott Campbell fan. He's probably one of my favorite artists. I've been a big fan of his since Gen 13. I've pretty much followed everything he's done since, even that shitty Wildsiders book that he did Somewhere After Danger Girl. And now he pretty much exclusively does covers. That's all he does is like variant covers, exclusive colors. He does that fantasy, that fairy tales calendar the past 2 years.
Is that a sign that you've made it as far as comic artistry goes? You don't have to write comics anymore, but they'll just commission the shit out of you to do covers.
All right. Now, I love J. Scott Campbell. It's a sign that you're lazy. because one of the biggest problems that he had was his books never came out on time, ever. Because he could never finish an entire issue in a timely fashion. He was one of those guys that would have to finish like 10 issues before they could release the first one.
Jesus.
So that there was some sort of regularity to the release.
Going.
Yeah.
That sounds like my podcast.
So, there you go. So he does just covers now. He does great with his covers. He gets to draw a bunch of different characters, and good for him, man. I still love his art. Don't get me wrong. Mm. So when issue one came out and I saw that there was a variant cover with him on it, I went and scooped that one up. It wasn't hard at my local store that I picked it up at. It was, you know, there was like 10 issues of Lady Mechanica number one in the store, and there was 5 of one cover and 5 of the other. So it's not like it's a chase. It's not like a one per retailer. It's not like a $30 buy on eBay. You should be able to grab whatever one you want. That being said, yes, Lady Mechanica is an attempt at a steampunk themed comic book.
Attempt, you say, which makes it sound like it might be steampunk, as you almost said there.
Well,
is that where you're going?
It's hard. You know, steampunk as a genre is really hard to define because there's no firm footing for where it actually started or how it evolved.
It's like the Calvin ball of genre costuming things.
Yeah.
You know? The rules constantly change.
And it's like, you know, there are a bunch of references in different areas and you know, what is and what is not considered steampunk and you know, and then there's like neo-Victorian, which is kind of steampunk, but not really. Mm. And then there's like cyberpunk and it's the only thing that truly defines it for the most part is the aesthetic. You know, the look of things, the time period, you know, Zeppelins, like that's the only thing that there's not much variation on. Everything else is really kind of left up to interpretation.
Right.
Now, in my delving into the world of steampunk, I've read a bunch of different things. I read a book, Leviathan, by Scott Westerfield, which was okay. It was pretty good. It was a steampunk book, but it was kind of like, kind of took place in its, I don't know, it was weird. It was kind of like steampunk light. It was weird. And then there was another great book that I read, The Bone Shaker by Cherry Priest, which
yes.
To me, to date, I'm holding that up there as now either my number one or number two in my list of steampunk books I've read recently, because I also read Sir Thomas Riley, which I very much liked.
Riley, I need to work on. I Bone Shaker's actually in my hands thanks to you, and it's kind of a slow-ish start. It's taking me a bit to get into it, but I can see she's got a good feel for it. Like, you know, out of all the little bits and pieces I've read, she really seems to have at least a handle on a good solid steampunk handle, and like she's got a good rule set, I think, with her universe.
What I like most about that book and her writing in that book is that she gives good, legitimate background to the aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we've joked on this show before that, like, you know, the first piece of garb you have to get in the steampunk world, like we talked about fair garb. The first piece of fair garb I ever picked up was a Starfire sword.
Yep.
That's where it started. I got that and then I pieced it from there. The first piece of steampunk garb almost everybody gets is the goggles.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
But why? Why the goggles? What is the meaning behind? There is no meaning behind the goggles for the most part.
It's different for everybody.
At least in Boneshaker, she gives a meaning to it. And I'm not going to ruin it for the people who haven't read the book. You should read it. It's definitely a good read. So the reason I say steampunk-ish is because, you know, it's hard to define it. I mean, certainly the time period is right. We're talking like 1870, 1880, 1890. You know, so that's definitely the right period in history where this would happen. We do have flying machines, Zeppelins and the such. So that's definitely there. And there's definitely, you know, there's definitely like clockwork and mechanica, obviously, and gear. And that kind of stuff is there. But this kind of brings in this weird monster element to it.
This is in Lady Mechanica.
In Lady Mechanica. I'm sorry. Yeah. It kind of brings in this weird monster element into it. And it's kind of like, you know, she's part machine. She's part machine instead of having accessories that are based on mechanics and mechanical bits. She actually is part mechanical.
Eh.
So it's strange. I'm not going to say that it's not steampunk. I'm just going to say that it's subgenre of what steampunk is. And because you can't define it, how do you define this book? It's only issue one. I liked it. I'm going to pick up issue two. The art is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is okay. It's not amazing, but it's okay. And I'm at least interested in seeing where the storyline goes. You know, I'll give it two or three issues. If by the third or fourth issue, it's still steampunk, then I'll probably drop it. But this, I think, to my knowledge, is the first genuine, full-fledged attempt at acknowledging a steampunk comic book. Now, there have been other things out there.
Interesting.
I think there's like Clockwork Girl is a book that's out there, and The Clockmaker, which I think who wrote that book? I can't remember. The guy that worked on Alex Ross, he worked with to do Kingdom Come. He used to live in Montclair. I can't think of the writer's name.
The audience is screaming at you. I can't help you. Sorry.
But, you know, he did a book that was kind of steampunky. This is really like, this is acknowledged as this is supposed to be a steampunk book. So it's good. I recommend picking up the first issue at the very least. Give it a look. At least for the visuals alone, it's pretty to look at. It's worth a couple bucks.
The cover from this angle is looking pretty sharp. So,
issue zero is pretty easy to find. The good thing about issue zero, let me just throw that out there real quick. It's not one of those like 3-page, 4-page issues. Issue zero is actually like a full length book.
Nice.
I mean, it's like a full length story that introduces, and I hate to say this, but the one problem I have with issue zero is, traditionally speaking, issue zeros are kind of, maybe you don't need it in order to follow the story. I kind of think if you don't read issue zero, after having read issue one, if you don't read issue zero, you may find yourself kind of lost in issue one. So I definitely recommend picking them up if you can. They're both still available. It's pretty easy to grab. So
cool.
That's your comic this week, Lady Mechanica.
Very nice.
All right. Product.
That's this one over here.
Geek Stuff. Product reviews.
All right. So fans of this show, again, know that we talk about Tonner a lot on this show. like a whole lot. Me and despite all of the criticisms that Tonner gets, me and Kev still are pretty big fans of almost everything that they do.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there are some flawed pieces out there. Which we won't address right now.
There might be, Rabbit. There might.
But we've talked about some of them and what those flaws are. That being said, I think this piece might be flawless.
Wow. It's all I can spit at you right now is just a wow.
So to my knowledge, this is the third piece in Tonner's Muppet line. The first two pieces were Mrs. Piggy. Mm. There was Pigs in Space Piggy.
Right.
And then there was the Christmas Piggy. She was kind of like in a red velvet dress and she had like the white, yes, like hand muff thing.
Excuse you?
Exactly. But this is the first non-Piggy piece. Of course, this is Kermit.
That's just it's gorgeous. He's absolutely awesome.
Now, very different from almost everything else Tonner does.
Well, and I mean, Tonner is associated with the doll sort of thing and the fashion sort of thing. They're about, you know, the clothes, and making these really, you know, and in the case of the replica stuff, spot on, you know, versions,
right,
of the clothing of these iconic characters. But there ain't no clothing to speak of other than fleece for Kermit.
His collar, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this piece, he's naked and he's hard. You know, he's like he's kind of like a soft, I don't know, he's probably rotocast, I think is probably what he, yep, is. But, I mean, as far as Kermit goes, it's a spot-on replica. There's not a lot of points of articulation on this piece. I think we're talking about probably, it looks like there are 5 points of articulation. The arms, the hips, and then the head looks like it
yep,
moves as well. Why you want this piece? Because you're a Muppets fan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even if you bought nothing else, Tonner, even if you didn't get Piggy, just if you're a general Muppets fan, what a great, iconic Kermit figure.
That's, it really is right on the money. And, you know,
what would you say? He's about 10 inches?
I'd give that about 10, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that he's at about 10 inches. The Piggy figure is closer to the Harry Potter scale, I think. So, that being said, I think he's probably in scale with Piggy, considering he's supposed to be shorter.
From what I remember of the Piggy piece that you've shown me, I mean, yeah, he's right in line with that.
Yeah, Piggy's like in the 15, 16-inch range.
Yeah.
So he's probably in the 10 or 11-inch range, somewhere in that ballpark. So, yeah, I mean, he's you know.
So, I mean, this to me, as far as my experience with Tonner is through you guys,
right,
and being, you know, primarily about the clothing, not so much about the likenesses as we've seen in some of the pieces that we've been disappointed about,
right,
but the clothing makes the man or the woman as far as their stuff goes. This kind of a departure, I mean, can we expect more Muppets from them? Is Kermit just sort of a thing to as an accessory more or less for the Piggy pieces?
No, I could be completely crazy. But I think either I read or I saw, I think there's a Gonzo piece somewhere in the future.
Mm.
I could be completely wrong on that. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But I think I either read or I saw a Gonzo piece somewhere in the future. This wouldn't be the first time that they've kind of done this. I mean, if you go back to the Harry Potter line, they put out a Dobby piece.
Mm.
The clothing on the Dobby piece was a burlap sack. I mean, literally, it was a burlap sack. The real joy in that piece was the departure from the base doll figure and the likeness. It was a great likeness.
Right.
I mean, Dobby is an elf, you know, and you can't use a generic Tonner body. It's smaller proportions, it's kind of lanky, big hands, pointy ears, pointy nose, very defined features.
Right.
So this isn't the first time that we've seen that. Certainly, I hope that they move. I mean, if this is what we can expect from the Muppets, I hope that they move forward with the Muppets.
Oh, my God. I my sights are thoroughly set on a Bunsen and Honeydew.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Excuse me, Bunsen, Honeydew, and Beaker set. And Statler and Waldorf.
Let's talk about Bunsen and Honeydew. Those would be not only... Bunsen and Beaker. If they could keep up the level of likeness on those two, they could actually really excel well with the clothing on those because,
oh, yeah,
you know, Bunsen's lab coat is very defined, but Beaker and his kind of his shoes and his like plaid kind of checkered,
oh, yeah,
crazy ass pants and stuff. I mean, there's a nice definition of those characters.
The hair is easy. They can get that from any troll doll in the in the 80s, and that's done.
I have a feeling if they did that, I wonder if they would go with sculpted hair as opposed to real hair.
I would hope not on that. Beaker, there's something.
Yeah.
That needs to be fuzzy orange hair.
Yeah.
Have to be.
My only concern with this piece that I think Piggy had and this doesn't, I think Piggy was flocked. I think Piggy had texture. You know what I mean? Like I think her skin was flocked, or maybe just her face was flocked and her hands weren't. I think there was some sort of texture to her. And there is zero texture on Kermit. I mean, it's just flat green.
Right.
So, you know, for a character like Gonzo, do you sculpt texture into him? Do you flock him? You know, and then what happens with Rolf or Fozzie Bear? How do you do the? I'd be interested to see how they interpret some of those other characters.
Whatever
going
choice
forward.
They make, like it's something they got to stick to their guns on. You know, and you don't want to say, well, let's try, you know, sculpting texture on Gonzo. We weren't too thrilled with that, so let's actually fuzzify a Rolf or a Fozzie.
Right.
And you know, you're gonna have a line that's a little bit mismatched, and that may hurt that a little bit. So whatever choice they make, they got to really stick to it 100%.
Well, either way, if you want to check out this peach, you can go to Tanner Dahl. Did I just say peach?
I think you did.
If you want to check out this peach of a piece, you can go to tannerdahl.com. Check out all that they have. Check out all the Muppet stuff. Check out all the Disney stuff too. I mean, taking a little sidestep here, we talked about the Jessica Rabbit piece that they put out on the show, which is awesome. I have her in my personal collection.
Fantastic piece. Yeah.
Having looked at this Kermit, now what I want more than having looked at Kermit, having seen Dobby and know what they can do, I want a fucking Roger Rabbit. I want Roger.
My Lord.
Could you imagine like a nice hard bodied Roger with the nice, like the, you know, they can give him the real clothing suspenders, yep, and the gloves even a little bit, but that would be a great companion piece to Jessica Rabbit.
From your lips to, well, Bob's ears, I guess.
Yeah. So, I think that's our product review for tonight. And I think with that, we're probably going to move into the close of the show.
We're going to do a wrap up?
Fuck no.
We don't want to wrap it up?
No, because despite the democratic process, I am in the no wrap up camp. I don't need to repeat what I just said. I can't remember what I just said. I just said Tanner Peach 2 seconds ago.
And
I don't want to repeat
that. Bunsen and Honeydew.
Yeah, exactly.
Which are both responsible for.
And Steambunk. So clearly no one wants to hear me say anything I've said already.
Wrap this, yeah. I guess is what we'll say.
Exactly. So don't forget, you can check us out each and every week over at BigKevsGeekStuff.com, where we have all of our episodes, including our Live from Studio V's, the two most recent, New York Comic Con's Part 1 and Part 2. Also, you can check out Big Kev's Geek Stuff, the Sirius XM Experience, every other Saturday night on Sirius 197 XM 202, The Virus. And I think that's it. Why don't you plug yourself out there if you feel like it? Go for it.
People would love for me to plug myself.
That's personal.
Well, I'll go ahead and throw a plug out there. For as often as we do it, I come from this show, but I have my own little show over at flickpodcast.com. That's FLICK podcast.com. And we're wrapping up this volume of the show, so I don't know what's going to happen to us in 2011, but we'll be back around.
All right.
In the meantime, check out what we have there so far. We've had a lot of fun on that end, and that's where we pride ourselves on being the we call Geek Stuff Papa. With some frequency over there, so we'd love to have you give an ear to if you get a shot.
Absolutely, I recommend giving it a listen. It's definitely a fun show, and if you like this show, you'll like that show. I mean,
gets angry or angrier over there, and that seems to be a selling point for the show for a lot of our current listeners. So enjoy.
And I just want to say thank you to you for sitting in tonight and going through this show with me.
You're in my house, sucker. Where am I gonna go?
You know what I mean.
But thank you, and I return that thanks for inviting me along, and this is always a good time with you, and thrilled to be here.
So with that, I will end this show the same way Big Kev ends every single show. Good night, Just Mike, wherever you are.
And on that note, we cue the music.
The Grid. A digital frontier. I tried to picture clusters of information as they moved through the computer. What did they look like? Ships, motorcycles. Were the circuits like freeways? I kept dreaming of the world I thought I'd never see.